welcome to episode 137 of
Brutal Battle.
Yes, that is yet another new voice for the podcast, and that's what we do around here. I just like to mix it up, get new folks in, and today we have Mr.
Oliver Gray.
Yes, Oliver Gray. This is not a joke. His last name is Gray.
Yeah, G-R-A-Y.
And where are you from originally?
I was born in Manchester, England.
There you go. Yep. You sound so English.
Oh, do I? Yeah, that accent really comes through, huh?
The name sounds English, yes.
25 years in America will kill the accent pretty quickly,
I think 25 years anywhere
will kill
whatever accent you had, pretty much.
Definitely.
But we're going to get into who Oliver is and what Oliver does in a minute. But first it's time for, and I warned Oliver about this, hop knowledge.
That was exciting.
You didn't,
for that.
You didn't laugh.
That
you
was
didn't
good.
Laugh. You didn't smirk. Or...
I thought you were going to be a little more sing-songy about it.
I'm well rehearsed.
Okay.
I've been doing this for.
I believe you. 137, right? That's.
Yeah. All right. So today we're going to do ultra hops. So if you know anything about these, go ahead and throw in what you feel necessary. But here's the information. Ultra hops, bred by the Hops Research Program in Corvallis, Oregon, in 1983. Corvallis, a place I like to go to. It's basically used best for Pilsners, Wheats, and Bocks, and it was originally a mixture of Hallertau, Mittelfrüh, Saaz, and something that was unknown, basically. So it's like 4/6 of it is Hallertau, Mittelfrüh, 1/6 Saaz, and 1/6 whatever the unknown variety is.
Cool.
So it was released by the USDA in 1995, and related to traditional German hops varieties in character and application.
Hmm.
It's mainly used for aroma because the alpha acids are 4 to 5%, so very
low.
Not great for bittering in that sense. The aroma is compared to Liberty.
Hmm.
It's a classic Bavarian style variety and provides a mild, spicy bouquet in beers that it's used. So
sounds pretty good.
So obviously good substitutes for this if you can't get ultra hops, or probably people don't even know what the ultra hops are, probably first time in hearing. You can obviously use Hallertau, Mittelfrüh, and Saaz.
Mm-hmm.
Would be great ways to
noble family.
Yeah, stick to the fam.
I was just thinking, and I've never seen ultra in the homebrew store.
Oh yeah, well it doesn't surprise me because I've never even heard of it.
When
I looked this up, I was like,
As soon
ultra,
as you said that, I was like, I know a lot of hop varieties, I never heard of it.
Yeah. So, two examples of beers done with ultra hops. I mean, there's only three on the list, so it is quite limited. Fish Brewing Company's Oktoberfish, as well as Nutfield Brewing Company's Harvest Ale.
Mmm, sounds delicious.
If anybody knows these breweries out there, please.
Shout out to these breweries.
let them know that they were mentioned,
first
of all, and let me know what their beer's like, second of all. So... But anyway, we have a guy here who does some very important craft beer related stuff.
I don't know about that.
Very important craft beer related stuff. But first, we want to welcome him with a warm up beer.
Yeah,
I gave him a choice, and he wanted to go hoppy today, which is good.
It's actually out of character for me, but I was saying I haven't had a beer for a couple days because I've been working so hard. So hoppy felt right. Yeah.
Well, hoppy will do you after not having
exactly. So
we're gonna go with the Spiteful Brewing out of Chicago, Illinois. They're working for the Weekend Double IPA, and ABV is 7.9%. I just cut my nails the other night, so it's hard getting these.
Mine are like paper anyway, so it doesn't really matter if I... I'm saying I've never had anything from Spiteful.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm.
Oh, my gosh.
I've had some of the big Chicago names, but never anything from Spiteful.
I love Spiteful. Big fan. So, obviously very... I mean, it's a double IPA. It looks very much like a double IPA. It's very, rich orange color to it. Pretty well filtered, a little hazy.
Yeah, tad. It could be the cold.
Yeah, just slightly hazy there. Nice little bit of a white head to it. What do you smell on that?
Mm.
Just like...
Everything.
I know, right?
I smell the universe. Yeah.
It feels so citrusy.
Yeah. A little juicy. Not much dank. When I first took it, I was like, oh, it's going to be dank, and then it dropped out. But the citrus is heavy.
No, yeah, it's kind of like squeezing... Like, there's grapefruit in there. Mm-hmm. For me, there's some straight-up orange going on in there.
I get more orange than grapefruit, for sure.
That's so nice. A little bit of grassiness.
I don't have a fantastic nose. Confession time. So,
well, I mean,
yeah.
For for everyone, the experience is different. Right. You know, right. I've had people pick things out of beers on this podcast, and I'm like, you know, I don't smell that.
Roasted cashews. I'm sure they do.
Right. I'm sure everyone smells something different. And
I do get a ton of orange.
Yeah, it's very, very orangey. Yeah. It's so citrusy. It's so thick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's that's why I said it was like the universe. Yeah. Like so much coming at you. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me believe that when I drink this, it's just going to coat my palate. Yeah. And it's going to be super juicy, super orangey. Probably relatively low bitterness, though. I don't really smell a ton of bitterness on it.
No.
So.
Or alcohol, to be honest. No, yeah, no. I don't. It could be hidden. But again, it's only 7.9, which for a double isn't even that crazy. So
I smell like no alcohol, to be honest. Well, go ahead. Jump into
thank
it.
Thank you. Cheers
to you, man.
You were right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can almost feel like it. It's not overly sweet, but you still get kind of like as it hits the back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like the back sides of the tongue tingle a little bit with a little bit of like sweetness to it.
It's nice, nice balance though, because you couldn't smell any alcohol. Can't even taste any alcohol. So
it's got a nice malt backbone to it, which obviously increases the body to it. And I think it coats my palate quite well.
I'm interested to see what a base malt is in this. If it's just basic two-row, pale two-row.
I don't know if they're... I don't think they... Yeah, they're not one of the breweries that puts it on the can, but...
Total random tidbit while we're talking about malt backbones. Did you know that Port City uses Pilsner malt as their base malt in all their beers?
I had no idea.
Which is pretty unusual. Most breweries use pale two-row, just two-row. So when I found... We went down there. Brian Roth, a fellow blogger, went down to Port City to meet some guys down there, and we just did a little mini tour of their facility and this huge hopper of Pilsner. I was like, oh, you guys are brewing something with a Pilsner base. He's like, no, all of our beers. And I'm like, well, that is... Huh. Yeah, so they get... I mean, you're getting all those biscuity flavors, all those additional things that come from a Pilsner malt. Pricey, too. To use Pilsner as a base malt. I mean, compared to just generic... You know, American two-row barley. It's not. I mean, it's imported one. So it's an odd decision, but a cool decision. And now that I know, I'm going for it. And even in the just like Essential Pale Ale and their regular IPA Monumental, I'm like, okay, yeah, like it's just enough that it separates, like distinguishes it just enough. It's not like, I mean, you're talking base malt. It's not going to create a completely different beer. Yeah. But So anyway, little tidbit.
That's very interesting. So Oliver. What you do, you're a beer blogger. Not as a living, but it's what you like to do for fun, basically.
Yeah.
You do get paid here and there, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You've had some stuff in All About Beer Magazine. Correct. Anything else?
I also edited some books for Brewers Publications.
Awesome.
So Gordon Strong's homebrew book. And actually, while we were talking about malt, and it's partly why I know so much about malt, I did John Mallett's malt book. The actual book about malt, which was a fun challenge because I knew malt as a beer guy who's been homebrewing for a while, knows malt, but you don't really know malt until you talk to somebody who is like the acquisition manager for Bell's Brewery. Absolutely. And then all of a sudden, oh, I don't know anything about malt at all, but I know how to edit. So I got that going on for me.
That's awesome. So the blog that you run is Literature and Libation. And in my opinion, it's a great beer blog.
Thank you. It's
probably my favorite.
Wow, you don't have to say that because I'm sitting next to you.
No, you're actually, that's not the case. Actually, now that I think about it, I can't think of another one that I like more. So it is my favorite, I'll go ahead and say.
Well, that's quite the compliment.
The thing is, we were talking beforehand and you were saying how some people like the way you write and some people don't. I love it because what makes sense to me is that it's very important, in-depth topics and it's very knowledgeable, but the way it's written is not, I wouldn't say not quite conversational, but it has a hint of conversation to it that kind of pulls the reader in that I really like. So I think the style works very well, and you have tons and tons of stuff, especially like science-related things, which are really cool, in my opinion, when it comes to beer. So
Thank you. I start writing about things that I don't see a lot of people talking about.
Right.
And so I do research on the side, and it's one of those... It's why I don't do beer reviews. I did when I started, and if I do write a beer review, it's not really a beer review. I tried to get off of the beaten path because beer is a very popular topic and there's a lot of people talking and writing about it. And you need those people, the people that are doing the everyday, even just bar reviews, brewery reviews, tour. Yeah, you need those people because you kind of got to have that data dump. But then, you also need to get beyond that a little bit because if all the commentary and beer stays at what's in the glass... That industry's not going to grow.
It's the most superficial thing at that point.
Exactly. I mean, arguably the most important thing, But well, then when you look at, I always say that I like to write about beer because I have yet to find a topic that touches so many individual aspects of life. Like, yes, there's all the science of brewing, right? It's incredibly scientifically complicated to make beer. It's actually kind of a miracle that anybody made it historically. And it then
accidentally in the future.
I mean, they didn't even know what yeast was. Louis Pasteur identified yeast in the 1700s, 1729. Mm-hmm. Quote me on that. I know, I don't think that's it. If I'm right, that's lucky. But we didn't even know what yeast was. Everybody thought it was magic or the divine, and it was just that fermentation was spontaneous and magical.
Well, in Germany with the Bavarian purity laws, they didn't include yeast because they had no clue.
Right.
Then when they found out, they're like, oh my God, we need to include yeast out here because you can't make beer otherwise.
It's a little important in making beer. Yeah. You can't just dump ethyl alcohol into wort and have beer. So,
Or you can. I just don't think it's going to be very good.
Exactly.
But so how did you end up getting to the point you are right now? Like, what got you into craft beer in the first place? And then what got you to craft beer blogging?
That's a very good question. So I grew up in a beer household. My family's British, as we talked about earlier, from Manchester. And my dad grew up drinking real Boddingtons, real Tetleys, nice. Like, because Boddingtons was brewed in the Strange Ways Brewery in Manchester, England. It was called the Cream of Manchester, and it was the beer that my dad drank from 14 onwards, and then it got purchased.
I don't think you can use that name these days, the Cream of Manchester.
I don't think
it would fly.
It's, England, America, things are different, So,
Do they still call it that, though?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, since AB InBev bought them in 94 or something, it's, and honestly, I was too young. My dad used to let me try his Boddingtons, and we used to get Boddingtons pre AB InBev purchase, and I can't say with any distinction, but my dad, who was seriously a Boddingtons fanatic, it was the beer he always had in the house, really didn't like what happened after basically the export version changed, and we were in the States already, so he was buying the export stuff, and I have actually had a pint of Boddingtons in Manchester, and in England it tastes better. So it's just the widget cans and everything. It's apparently a shadow of the beer it was. Long story short.
Happens with a lot of shipped beers.
I mean, just the nature of having it sit in a container all that time to get over the ocean to come here, right?
Big time.
So they also moved it from Strange Ways up to be brewed in Galloway in Scotland, I believe. Oh. So it's a different brewery now, even. Yeah. So a lot of things changed. I think the recipe stayed the same, but if you're talking about terroir of water, the water in Burton-on-Trent in Manchester, a lot of people say that water, it's like the water in Dublin, they say, gives Guinness a lot of its flavor profile. Same thing with the original Boddington. So if they moved it, could just be the water change. Because you can treat water and do all that stuff, but there's all those little hidden elements and minerals that you're...
Yeah, so unless you're doing the work to figure out every little piece that's in that water and then stripping it down and rebuilding it, which some breweries do.
Oh, yeah. And even so, much work. Even so, I mean, we understand a lot about water science in the modern age, but I'm not sure you can really recreate some of that, je ne sais quoi, that's in the water.
You can get it close, potentially. Yeah.
So my dad drank a ton of beer. My grandpa was a home brewer. My dad was a home brewer. So I used to, bring girlfriends home and my dad would be in the kitchen siphoning beer. And I'd be like, don't worry about him. He's just an insane person who lives in our house. So I seriously grew up around beer.
That's awesome.
And, my parents were big kind of partiers and, not wild, but they'd like to be social and have people over. So it just made sense. As I got old enough to drink, I didn't really ever go through a phase where I drank like crappy American beer because don't get me wrong, in college I had plenty of Natty Light playing beer pong kind of thing. But when I had money to spend, I was buying Bass. I was buying pale ales. And my friends are like, ew, pale ale. And I'm like, this tastes great. This is what I... So I've always had a palate that was much more towards the original English ale side of things.
So noble hops are... They taste like home to you in a sense.
Yeah. And honestly, some of the German beers too, but I didn't drink much lager. I always went for ales until I got older. So I think it was just a natural segue when more beer was available with the craft beer movement that I was going to gravitate towards all the products that were out there. I think it was it was inevitable. Like if the beer was available, I was going to try it. Partly because I loved beer, partly because I was a home brewer, partly because I had a propensity for ales, kind of whole thing. So, college went by, I studied English in my undergrad, English literature actually. And then, basically as soon as I had a job and I had any spare money, I was like seeking out other beers. Because I tried all the imported British beers, the Sam Smiths, you know, Tetley's. Some good, really good beer. Yeah. I mean, Sam Smith still makes their oatmeal stout. It's fantastic.
And their nut brown porter. Yeah. Their nut brown ale. Really good.
Very good. Very good. So I tried all those. So I was like, well, I'm going to start trying to drink some of these American beers. So obviously Sierra Nevada, Sam Adams, like the big guys, Anchor. I used to drink Anchor Steam. So much of that stuff. And it was, my friends were all still buying, you know, Bud Light. And I was drinking, and it was simply a taste thing. Like, I wasn't turning my nose up to Bud Light. If I went to a party and people were drinking Bud Light, I'd drink Bud Light. But it was when I had my own money to spend, and it was my fridge, and it was my house.
So treat yourself.
Exactly. Like, exactly. This is what I want. If you're going to drink and put the calories in your body and stuff like that, you might as well enjoy what. So that's, it all started with, I would say the turning point for me, I had a work trip in 2008, maybe 2009. It was my first year out of college. Out of undergrad, and I went to Boston, and we were in Boston, and we were at a hotel, and we had this crazy work conference, and I was doing registration of all the guests. It was like 1500 people. It was a pretty big conference for a small company. And, I sat down at the bar and I ordered a Harpoon IPA, not thinking anything, just, I wanted a beer that wasn't the other off, like the, yeah, I'd had Sam Adams before Boston Lager. I was like, okay, I'll have the Harpoon. And a second I had that sip of Harpoon IPA, something in my brain, like puzzle pieces, Rubik's Cube, shifted. And from there on, I was just kind of like, I got to go for the beers that are brewed like this. I didn't even know what it meant. Like, I didn't know that it was hoppy. I didn't know that it was, I mean, I kind of had a general sense, but I really, and so from there out, that's the kind of turning point, I think.
So if anyone from Harpoon hears this, you should know that you were integral in making Oliver who he is today and making that blog basically come to fruition.
Yeah.
How did that happen? How did you decide, I'm going to put these things together? Because you said that you did English when you were in college.
Yeah.
And then how were you like, wait a second, beer in English?
I know. It's funny. I always say to people, I'm actually a writer before I'm a beer person. And that sounds kind of crazy because I'm a pretty big beer person. But I approach life as a writer. I'm a technical writer by trade. I've always written. Even I used to write little cheesy love notes to my little girlfriends and stuff like that. And
I did poetry, dude. It's
fine. Hey, man. Hey, high five. High five on the poetry. Yes,
love it.
So, like mock heroic and iambic pentameter, just like my favorite. So I had this background in it. And I was writing and I started the blog with no intention of writing about beer. I just thought literature and libation sounded like a cool name, admittedly.
And then if you wanted to put any type of drink into it,
Could. And so one of the original things is there's that whole kind of lore of a lot of famous authors drank. I mean, James Joyce, Hemingway, you know, seriously, go down the list. Yeah. Like, especially classic authors, there's this kind of bad romance with alcoholism in a lot of these, you know, they're tormented artists and they have this whole kind of thing. So that was a little bit of an homage to that. I wasn't quite, maybe bolstering myself a little too much there. So I was writing about all kinds of stuff, just weird, whatever came up. And then my sister said, why don't you write a beer review of something bad? Because I'd written some like funny bad reviews, kind of like Don't Drink Beer. If you ever seen Don't Drink Beer's blog, he does
actually.
Like,
no, I have not.
So he does like comical, like it's like negative, but it's funny. So I wrote Bud Light Platinum had just come out, and so I bought a bottle of Bud Light Platinum and I wrote this review. And admittedly, to me, it just tasted like malt liquor. And I don't really like malt liquor, so I wrote, and it was funny. I wasn't like, you know, but I wrote this review. And all of my friends, like in my little circle, were like, you gotta keep doing this. Like, do another one. So I started doing them. So I would buy sampler packs, you know, with like four different beers. And then I would review all four in the thing. And I'd try to come up with a theme. And some of that I did Smutty Nose and Heavy Seas and like whatever sampler I could find and a different one. And I'd go and buy it and I would review the beers in the thing. And then it seriously just took off. It was people wanted to read about beer. I started getting more and more followers. And then I started getting on Twitter and doing on Facebook. And
snowballed.
Yeah, really. And it was, I didn't realize the audience for beer was as big as it was until I started writing about beer.
Right.
And then it kind of evolved into, I got my master's degree in nonfiction writing from Johns Hopkins University. And I studied really kind of high rhetorical style so it fed into my English literature research because like Restoration period, Samuel Johnson, Jack Dunn, a bunch of those guys, the way they wrote really spoke to me. And it was complicated. You know, it's not simple English. It's not Hemingway-style simple English. Mm-hmm. But it was what I liked. I was like, I love to write like this. So I was like, I'm just going to write about beer. like this. And then everybody in my master's program seemed to like that and the style I was writing in. And so I just went with it 6 years later.
So you've been doing it for 6 years?
6 years.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah.
That's awesome, though. But the thing that really drew me into your blog when I started looking at it was I've seen plenty of blogs where it's just kind of like, it's very superficial.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of just like, this is what I think of these beers. You know, I went into this brewery and it was like this. And even when people try to take on a more, like a deeper topic, it was still at the surface. It was still like those very basic arguments being made.
I get what you're saying.
Research, yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I looked at what you were doing, I mean, perfect example, you had an article recently about gerrymandering.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did you make the relation between craft beer and macro beer and gerrymandering, but you gave in the beginning the historical background how gerrymandering started.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about it in politics and everything. So you took people through the history and then transition them over into how it relates to beer. And to me, that's how you write. I mean, that is how like all your articles are. And to me, it's brilliant. And that's what I like to read. And I don't want the stuff that's on the surface. I want something to challenge me because I can come up with my own stuff on the surface.
Yeah.
Everyone can come up with that on their own.
Totally, yeah.
Which I'm probably just destroying my fan base because this is kind of an on the surface podcast, you know, how it was created.
Your premise is unique, I don't think. Yeah.
But I mean, that's just what I like about it. So if that, you know, speaks to anyone out there, I would check out Literature
please,
and Libation.
Please do. And like I said, it's the style I write in is not for everyone. It's dense, and I know it's dense, and it's on purpose. I write like that because there are thousands of people writing perfectly good stuff about beer that you can go read if that's what you want. But I want to probe a little bit deeper. I want to say there's, if you look at more mature industries, even like look at film, right? Mm-hmm. Film's a good one for me. People get in, once you've gotten past the, this is how the movie was filmed, right? These are the shots that were used. This was the plot. Da, da. What's the next thing that everyone goes to? Social commentary.
Yeah.
What is the movie saying in this cat? Like, I'm trying to think of a good, like The Martian, right? Mm-hmm. You know, let's just use that one because it's topical, kind of. So, I mean, what is that saying about where we are as humanity and going to rescue a single man who's been left behind? And it, you know, as soon as you get past the basics, like how the beer was brewed, there's this huge open world to talk about social commentary. Why do we drink alcohol? Why are we so obsessed or in love with the concept of beer and wine and scotch and all the spirits? Like, it's this, there's, and I see it as fertile virgin territory that very few people, and it's partly because the industry is so young. I mean, really, if you're going to put a date on craft beer, and I think if you're being really generous with the picking up, 15 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Right?
If you want to talk about, like, Sierra Nevada.
Right, but I'm
saying,
you could
dip back into the late 70s.
Right. Oh, of course you can, yeah.
It didn't have a huge fan base then.
Right. I'm saying the kind of the big, you know, logarithmic upswing that we've had where we're now at 4,000 plus breweries.
Yeah,
I think that started
maybe 15.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what a baby of an industry in the grand scheme. And I think we're approaching some kind of middle age.
Yeah.
About right now.
I agree.
And I think that the kind of, I said it in the gerrymandering article, the luster of beer and the like, oh my God, new beer is everywhere is wearing off a little bit. Maybe not for everybody, and there's maybe a guy who had his first IPA yesterday who's still, oh my God, IPA. But eventually we're going to reach pretty much everybody, and it's going to, something is going to, the steady climb cannot keep going.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to, like, the writing that you're doing. You know, you're going to see more and more beer bloggers start showing up. So since you're where you are, and you're kind of a pioneer for that area, you have staying power. You know,
I hope so.
And, you know, I look at this podcast, and when I started this about a little over 3 years ago, there were beer podcasts, but there weren't a whole lot.
No.
And since I started it, it's obviously not because of me, but I've seen a massive explosion of beer podcasts out there.
It's like the, so everyone joked when even that blogs are old. Right.
Yeah.
First of all, it's sad.
Reading's so old.
Right. Yeah. No, nobody wants to read anymore. Yeah. 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 So, people want video and they want audio. It's a little easier. I get it. You're on a commute or you're driving or something. A podcast. Yeah. Sweet. Awesome. I know Brian Roth, fellow blogger. He'll drive up from North Carolina to DC, just podcast the entire way.
Yeah.
It's a good time to do it. You're captive in the car. Whereas reading, you really have to sit down and first of all, you have to like to read. And then it takes time, you know? You have to open up. So it's, I get why podcasts are. And I actually, I love the concept, but as an individual, it's strange. I just, again, I'm a reader at the end of the day. So I would rather honestly read a transcript of a podcast than the podcast.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to start doing transcripts.
No, of course not. Not unless you get software to do it for you, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yes, there exactly. Well, actually, I could just have Siri on the whole time on my phone and do the voice to text and see how that works.
I'm sure it would be, we'll use words like flocculation regularly and see how she does with those. So,
yeah, that would not work. But
so, yeah, it's I do it to write. Is the ultimate thing there, and it just so happens to be about beer, and I enjoy writing about beer because beer is such a giant topic with so many things to talk about. Actually, teaser, and I don't often do this because I don't tell people what I'm working on, but you get a little spoiler. I'm writing a really big research post on the gerrymandering article is kind of about the industry and what the industry is doing and what the companies and the breweries are doing. But you have to remember the consumer is a huge, important, integral part. They have to actually buy the damn beer. Without them, this industry would not be doing what it's doing. I see in the industry a reformation, and I mean a literal, like, nailing the 95 Theses to the door, Martin Luther style reformation. So I'm writing this thing that basically is a, we are going through a craft beer reformation right now at a consumer level, where the consumer is demanding certain things, and like, so basically the Protestant Reformation, if you're familiar with it.
I learned it. I don't remember too much.
Martin Luther and the Protestants basically didn't like what the Catholic Church was doing. I won't go too far into this, but they were doing some shady shit. Like, they were buying off clergy and selling sin forgiveness, like all kinds of stuff. Right, you remember all that. There was a schism. Yeah. There were like six popes at one point. So Martin Luther and real Christians at the time said, no. This is ridiculous. We don't want to be Catholic anymore. We need to reform the church. Reformation. So he wrote this big list, 95 theses, nailed it onto the door, and then it seriously snowballed into a whole, I mean, it's a whole denomination now, Protestantism. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing now is we're the Brewers Association and Big Beer. I'm not going to say any specific company because it's pretty much a conglomeration of all the big beer guys. Yeah. Now including Constellation, which I didn't see coming. But, so they've got this whole thing that they're playing games at this level, and the consumer is going to make different demands. We want a reformation, and it's that we're going to have our way, because really we have the dollars and you think you guys are in charge. And I think the big beer companies are feeling it now, because people aren't buying their beer, so they're kind of seeing the truth of it is we can't just manipulate them into buying beer.
Not anymore. At one point they could.
Well, it was lack of option. Yeah. So it's a really interesting thing. I think that we're having a consumer reformation of there's two sola, I haven't written down at home. There are two tenets of it that basically were like that the scripture is the most important thing. And that's like saying that the beer is the most important thing, but then that it's a personal relationship with the scripture is kind of how you define it. Your personal relationship with beer is how you define it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Coming soon. Yeah.
Literatureandlibation.com.
Yeah.
It's
that
easy.
If you're into that crazy kind of stuff.
And I hope you are.
Yeah.
I hope you are. I'll be reading it.
Yeah.
So thank you for breaking everything down, Oliver, and thank you for being here. And
I'm glad to be here. Good. Yeah, really.
Well, let's give you your first crack at doing the mystery beers.
Okay.
So just to give you the quick reminder, we rate these beers after we've talked about the color, the aroma, and the flavor. Rate them on a 1 to 10 scale each. No half
okay,
points. Just, everyone's like, can I do half? No, you can't do half. Because, you know, it's kind of like Untapped, but
yeah, I don't know.
But instead of being able to do halves, which I think they can do quarters now, though, which is just crazy. But
really? I think you can.
Yeah, I think so. But anyway, the way it used to be, you could do halves, but we're doing 10 for that reason. But on the show, typically 3 has been a beer that I'm like, that's an okay beer. I could drink that. And then you go up from there. 1 is obviously you don't want to touch it again, but do the numbers how you want to do them.
Okay.
We certainly have people come on who want to
you
follow.
You said 1 through 5.
One through 10.
1 through 10. 1 through 10. Okay. So 3 is the beer?
Three typically, that's how it started.
Okay.
Being very harsh on it and leaving a lot of room.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Okay.
So I was like, 3, I'm fine with the beer. Like, it's fine.
Okay.
And then above. But you can do whatever you want. Okay. Certainly, Rebecca, my wife, who's been on the show numerous times, she's always like, I'm going to do what I want. I'm gonna give it.
I always kind of saw 5 as that.
And that's fine if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, well,
it's everybody's individual.
Well, let's try the beers before we get into that part.
Exactly. So I just, you know, to know where you are.
So we start with A?
All right. Yeah. So with A, Super clear.
Yeah, super clear.
Obviously filtered.
If I could get my homebrew this clear, I'd be a happy man.
Yeah, my gosh. I mean, it looks beautiful.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's filtered either. It could just be very, very high flocculating yeast that, sat properly.
No sediment whatsoever.
No, none.
Some stray bubbles just coming up every now and then from the bottom.
Very little head retention, though.
Yeah, there's not much head at all.
It's, even when you poured it, it didn't have a ton of head.
Yeah, no. So. And it's orangey, little yellow to it, but quite orangey.
Yeah, kind of dehydrated urine color.
Yes. I've said that numerous times on the show before.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and smell it.
Ooh. Unusual.
It smells kind of skunky.
Yeah, it's got
actually.
It's got like almost like fennel-y.
Yes. There's a little bit of that. I get a little bit of a peppercorn type nose on
it. Yeah,
well,
I can see that.
Which I think that's folding in with that skunky note.
That skunky note is powering me right now.
It's very powerful skunky note, like literally like a skunk's ass. Like when they spray, God, that smells
skunky. But there's definitely a fennel in there too.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. And I don't know, I just feel like this is probably from a, it just makes me think it's from a clear glass bottle.
Could be.
Because of that skunky aspect and how light destroys
it. It kind of smells like malt liquor. And that's what I keep naming with the fennel taste. Yeah, with the
should hope Rebecca did not malt.
That'd be hysterical. Yeah.
It's not nice. I'm getting
I got you some King Cobra.
I'm getting some, a little bit of hay note in there, a little alfalfa maybe.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that one.
And I can't get much else. That's about all I can get.
I'm seriously getting skunk and fennel. Like, I maybe a stretch to have an earthy kind of hay note, but...
It smells lagery, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Lager yeast.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely lager yeast.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it was fermented high, it's lager yeast.
Ooh. There's a lot of sweetness.
A ton of sweetness.
That's really weird.
Unexpected. It doesn't smell sweet at all.
I smell no sweetness. There's a lot less of the skunky aspect on the flavor.
Yeah, yeah. What is this?
Actually, I don't really. I get the slightest amount of a skunky note on there on the flavor, but it's not extremely skunky. It is very sweet. What is that sweetness like? It's like a juice.
It is.
It's a little bit like evaporated sugarcane juice.
Yeah.
Kind of weird, like super thick, super concentrated.
And then there's actually a pretty pronounced bitterness on the back end too, mm-hmm. which is surprising because it's not.
There is.
It's the original sip is not bitter at all, but then as it sits in your mouth, it gets, which means next to no aroma hops in this, but enough bittering hops to give you a background of bitter, which lager, that's not that strange for a lager. But the sweetness,
I get a tad bit of like a lemony aspect on there too,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and a little bit of that kind of like sweet tartness to go with it. It's interesting. It's not.
We were talking Kolsch earlier, and not that this is a Kolsch, but it's too dark really to be a Kolsch. A Kolsch is going to be kind of straw yellow, but this could be a lager that was fermented warm.
Okay.
Because you're getting those. So you're talking about like lemony and sweetness. Those could be esters that formed as the yeast fermented warmer. Huh. Could be. I mean, okay. I'm totally postulating here, but
that's the best part of doing these blind.
Yeah.
You just get to spitball.
And that could also be that fennel smell I'm getting. Because lager yeast, they ferment it cold so it doesn't produce any of the crazy byproducts. And it is that super crisp beer. But this smells like it has yeast byproducts in it.
You know, I from the smell of this beer, I thought I was just going to hate it. Because I thought a lot of that skunkiness would be in the flavor. And it's not. And it's not... I don't love it. I wouldn't get it again. But I don't hate it.
This is a context beer. If I'm barbecuing and I drink this beer, I'm probably going to really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in your basement and it's been sitting for a little bit, yeah, I probably wouldn't get it again. But context. I mean, that's true about a lot of beers.
Yeah.
Especially the lighter end of the spectrum beers. Because there's enough going on here that I'm not like, it's bland Bud Light poured out kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
Yeah,
it's
no,
it's a very
it is.
Confusing drink. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
and I thought this was, given how they look, I thought this was going to be the simpler of the ones.
Yeah, the way the sweetness just smacks you, and especially because you're not expecting it when you taste it. But
and
I will
it is,
say,
and it is sweet.
It's very sweet. Every time I try to take a sip, though, I have to fight that skunky aroma before I take the sip.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like just drink it at your own.
It was a bottle, right?
Peril, you know. Yeah, it was a bottle. Yeah. Yeah, Rebecca did the whole, you know, get them ready as mystery beers ahead of time because she's actually sick at the moment, so she don't want to be pouring beers. But
yeah, it's too late to really be a Vienna lager. What is it? It's definitely it's lager yeast. There's
no, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I just can't.
Well, I'm gonna keep thinking about what number I want to give that one, and
To be honest, I don't hate it. I should tell your listeners that I am not that crazy beer guy, right? Don't get me wrong. I really appreciate it. Actually, Sean gave me a box. I took pictures of his baby. Sean Grill, nice. This beautiful baby boy. And I do photography on the side. So he gave me this box of beers like payment, and it has some Dogfish Head Higher Math. Some I haven't tried it yet. But
I have not either.
Yeah, I mean, something like that just because I have to try it. 17%, you just gotta go for it, right? So
it's a challenge.
So I like big, complex, crazy beers, but really at the end of the day, I am a simple beer guy. Give me a well-done British pale ale. Give me a, you know, a good Kolsch. Like, really, I want to drink my beer. So
I hear you.
Yeah, so I appreciate these complex beers, but so that's what I'm saying. I actually kind of, in a way, like it.
Okay.
Contextually. Like, in the middle of winter, I wouldn't be picking that to drink.
I don't hate it. That's the best right. I can do. I don't hate it. B is interesting. It is very cloudy.
Yeah.
I cannot see anything through that. It's so hazy.
But it doesn't look like it's hop haze.
Yeah.
It looks like it's got, like, yeast, like it's a yeast suspension almost.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's orange, but it's, like, brown orange in color.
Well, it's funny. If you let the light come straight through it, it's definitely orange, but it is. When you look at it this way, like, it's browny. Yeah. It's a burnt orange.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm trying to think. The could also be residual malt. It smells like a...
This smells really interesting.
Smells like a brown ale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or but like it smells like a good brown ale with a lot of coffee notes and some chocolate to back it up.
The coffee is huge. Yeah.
There's a little bit of a chocolate.
But what? Like, with this color? How is it?
No, I mean, yeah. With this color, I figured it would be like a really crazy Imperial IPA, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I've even seen
seen
some Abbey ales that get to this color that are like a weird, like a Belgian style that's kind of... Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of a toffee note in the nose.
I think that all goes with the coffee, toffee, like that. That's why I said brown ale initially, because it just comes through like...
It almost comes off a little bit like...
There's even a vanilla.
I could see a little vanilla. Yeah. I get like a little bit of like a peanut protein type nose off it as well.
Yeah.
You know, like the oil from peanuts?
Yeah. Which, you know, you can't brew with oil, technically.
Really?
This is a lipid. So beer doesn't have any fat in it, right? Because CO2 retention and head retention is dependent on protein binding and stuff like that. So if you have a ton of fatty lipids, you won't form CO2 bubbles and you won't get a head. So if you ever have a home brewer and they pour you their beer and it has no head, they somehow either didn't sterilize their bottles right or something and there's lipids typically in there. Or they used soap.
Yeah. I'm almost wondering if this beer was... aged in a barrel. So I feel like I get some oaky aspects, and that maybe that's where vanilla's coming from.
That could certainly be. And that would explain the musty color, or the murky color.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's taste it. If it tastes the way it smells, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah.
Ooh. There is a tart sweetness at the end of that, which is kind of weird.
It kind of punches you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. But there's like cocoa... to it, and I get that vanilla aspect. I definitely get
barrel,
the coffee
barrel aged. Yeah. Once I've tasted it, all that comes barrel aged. What though?
I don't know. I don't get any sort of spirit in there, rum or bourbon or whatever. I just think like maybe an oak barrel. The roasty notes coming out of that are nice. It's giving nice coffee.
To be honest, I like this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I could drink this.
This is a nice beer.
If you let it sit and kind of hit your palate, you actually get some alcohol too. So it's probably higher ABV than you think. Not dramatically, but like this, you could let this sit on your palate and you would get any the A beer for the people. And you would never taste alcohol in this beer. I'm getting pretty, not like heavy alcohol, but let it.
I'm second guessing potentially the spirit barrel aspect of what I said. It could have been in some sort of spirit barrel, but just you're getting a low amount of the alcohol.
If it was a relatively low ABV beer, then yeah, maybe. But there is that, it's so distinctive. Yeah. Like, how else would you produce this flavor profile but with a barrel, right?
Yeah, and when you keep drinking it, you get like a toasty wood characteristic.
It's good.
It is good. This is a nice, I mean, the coffee notes, the like, I get like cocoa powder in there.
It really, yeah, just, yeah, yeah. And it actually kind of coats your mouth in like a really nice, hearty way.
Yep.
You ever put artificial creamer in coffee?
Mm-mm.
Okay, well.
I drink coffee black.
Yeah, me too.
Love it.
Me, like 99.9% of the time, but.
A lot of the time, beer, people who are big into craft beer, black coffee.
I'm also big into coffee.
Oh, me too. Love, yeah. We'll have to talk on the
podcast. Okay, yeah, yeah, okay.
Because I got some stuff to tell you about coffee, man.
Excellent, excellent. So the, anyway, go through, but there's, when you put artificial creamer, I used to work in an office that had horrible coffee, and the only way to really tolerate it was to put something in it, and I'm lactose intolerant, so I can't put milk in anything. So I used to they had the artificial creamer, I put it in there. It creates this saccharine, like, coating in your mouth, and this does the exact same thing. Like, it feels like it you can chew it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is that.
In a very good way. I don't know if that comes across as positive.
Which I feel like is probably the barrel aspect. Well, I mean, we're just assuming that at this point, but.
But it's the, there's enough malt in there to give it the.
That chewiness.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good beer.
Which is going to bump the ABV up, too.
I could do that beer again.
Yeah, me too, man. That's a good one.
All right, so at this point, got to make a decision. I'm going to go back to A real quick. This is probably going to taste really
exactly. Bad. I'm going to do some water in between, yeah.
I'm not. It's still not bad, actually.
I'm telling you, context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still not bad. Although I am getting a little more of that skunky aspect on the flavor now.
Yeah, yeah, it's skunky for sure.
Mm. Yeah, I don't want any more of A. I don't. That really is making it tough. Okay, I think I know where I want to go on A with number, but B is what's perplexing me currently.
I like this. I'm going to go after this, I'm going to go somewhere and buy some of this if I can.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay, so for A, I'll go ahead and take the lead on it. A, I think I want to give it a 2. Okay. I'm going to give it a 2. I was going to give it a 3, but the fact that that skunkiness just keeps getting to me, I just can't. I wouldn't do it again because it's a fight to take a sip each time.
Sure.
So I'm going to go 2 on that. And B, I'm going to go 5 on B. Nice. I like B. I don't think it's like phenomenal in my opinion, but good enough that I think I'd get some more.
Yeah,
I'd definitely get some more.
Yeah,
but it wouldn't be high on my list.
I might take it somewhere and be like, "Hey, try this.
Oh yeah,
this is an interesting beer." Yeah.
Well, make people look at it first and just be like, "What do you think this
exactly,
is?"
Exactly.
Now smell it. Now try it.
Yeah.
Blow people's minds.
Jailbreak did a White Russian beer,
uh-huh.
And it's basically a white stout, and it's total mindfuck.
I think it's called...
Are we allowed to swear? Sorry.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's called, hey, dude, there's a beverage here or something like that, like a reference to the Big Lebowski.
Yeah. So it's good. It's a really good beer, but when you pour it, it seriously looks like a like lager, and you drink it, and it's got vanilla and coffee, and it's really good. I get growlers and growlers. That's actually, they have it, right? I might get some on the way back.
It's kind of like Ballast Point's Calm Before the Storm.
Yes, yes.
Like light, very light in color. It's like yellow, and then you taste it, and smell it, and taste it, and it's like coffee and vanilla.
Which
and
is always really fascinating good. To me, because as someone who's studied brewing for a long time and has made many porters, many brown ales, many stouts, you use roasted barley and you use specialty malts to get a lot of those flavors and colors. So how do they do it?
Right.
Because how do you
mad
get
science.
How do you, exactly how do you get all that stuff without getting the color? Because roasted barley is basically burnt barley. I'm gonna use 5 as my midpoint.
No, that's fine.
Not 3. So 5.
Want,
5 is a okay. I'm gonna give this a 5 because
A is a five.
If it was the dead of winter and somebody handed this to me and it was freezing cold outside, I'd probably give it like a 3. If it was the middle of summer and it was 100 degrees outside and somebody gave this to me, I'd probably give it like a 6 or 7.
Situation.
So it's a total situation. But as it stands, as we're drinking it, I'm going to give it a 5.
Nice.
I actually really like this. I like beers that really kind of push me in different directions and give me a lot. Like,
okay. And this does.
Yes.
It certainly does.
So I'm actually going to give this a 7.
Okay. Yeah. 7 on B.
I quite like it.
Nice.
I would, whatever this is, I would buy it.
All right. Well, you'll find out.
I hope so.
So obviously B's the winner with an overall 6 and A not extremely far behind with an overall 3.5 for the show.
Yeah.
So there you go. And actually that means B will make it onto the website homepage as one of the best beers on the show.
Oh, fantastic.
One of the top ones.
Fantastic.
It's not the top, like, right. Sevens. Yeah, yeah. Overall sevens are at the very top, but it's not far
Well, this isn't, I mean, it's not like drinking BCBS or something like that. Like, I like this, but it's not like, oh my God. What did I drink? I had barrel-aged Bigfoot, and that blew my mind. Like,
bourbon
barrel. Yes, that's just, I like bourbon, so that helps. But, yeah.
All right, well, let's reveal the loser of the episode. Overall, 3.5. Not terrible, but the skunkiness, I'm not a fan.
See, I didn't get as much, but...
Okay, it's not out of...
It's Innocent Gun.
Oh, Innocent Gun. And where are they out of? They're Edinburgh?
Yeah, it's Scottish.
Oh, there you go. They're it's their Toasted Oak IPA.
So, you have to understand that IPA means something entirely different in England than it means in the U.S.
Okay, and what is that?
So I had a friend who recently went to Ireland and did this trip, and he went to Scotland as well, and he was like, dude, the IPAs over here are disgusting, right? Because mm-hmm. they're not the same style of beer. Our American IPA is a very hop-forward,
yes.
Really big malt backbone, usually like, typically, yeah, I mean, this
like
is a double.
Working for the weekend.
Exactly. Usually relatively high ABV, and you have to remember that you go and get a pint of mild or a pint of bitter in England or Scotland, it's like 3% alcohol.
Yeah.
So 5% to them, 6% is high. So, you know, you have to think. So their idea of IPA is kind of this big, that's funny because I don't, even having had, even some of the worst IPAs, like Green King is like one of those ones that people think is garbage kind of thing. It's like the crap IPA. This doesn't really come across as IPA to me. And Innocent Gun is a weird brewery. Scotland's a weird place. Really awesome place. But I think there's a lot more history in this as an IPA.
Yeah.
And this is like the modern take. So it's if you gave that to an American person and say, here's an IPA, they'd be like, what are you talking about? You're a crazy person, right? British person, Scottish person might drink that and be like, oh, okay, this is a pretty good IPA. Huh. Because the definition is literally not even in the same realm. Yeah. Because did you smell any hop in this at all?
No hops, and I you couldn't have told me it's toasted oak barrel.
No.
I mean, oak and but barrel, and I just...
You've had some of those beers, though, where it says oak on
yeah,
it.
You know,
and
it yeah. No, I definitely have. Yeah. That's 5.6% alcohol, so it's low. And we weren't perceiving any alcohol in it anyway,
No, not really.
You know,
I would have actually thought it was lower.
Yeah.
Under 5, maybe.
Well, that was interesting. Let's find out what B is. And I had to put a stopper in it, because it's a larger bottle, so... Got more.
Cool.
Which is nice. So B overall, 6, winner of the episode. Oh, okay. It's Morning Wood by Local Option. It's Oak Aged Coffee Amber. Well, there you go. We did a pretty good job. 7.3% alcohol by volume. Wow.
Didn't I say slightly higher ABV than you might think?
Yeah.
And that explains the amber color of it.
It's made with dark matter coffee. Yeah, Local Option out of Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but this one's contract brewed by Pub Dog in Westminster, Maryland.
Oh, okay.
So, this is a beer I've had before some time ago and really enjoyed it. I'm quite enjoying it again.
Yeah, it's always nice to come back to a beer that you enjoyed once and like your palate has changed and evolved probably, but you still enjoy it. I did that. So, Noble Rot, Dogfish Head Noble Rot.
Yeah.
First time I ever had it, I had no idea. I was new to beer, and I bought Noble Rot thinking, I love Dogfish Head, right? Their Shelter Pale used to be one of my... They stopped bottling it, but it used to be one of my favorites ever. Buy Noble Rot thinking, Dogfish Head. I really had a hard time.
Isn't that the one that has, like, muscat grapes in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's totally crazy when you're kind of new to craft beer, too, because it's... I mean, putting grapes in
it's got
beer,
wine must in it. Yeah, like 61. Like Dogfish Head 61, which I think is actually a fantastic beer for...
I need to go back to that.
For a hybrid beer, for basically a wine beer, if you will. Yeah. It's... I mean, Dogfish Head's basically inventing their genres at this point. But now...
Definitely.
Now that I know beer, and I've had a whole range of sours and Brett's and stuff like that, I'm so excited to try Noble Rot again, because I think I'm actually going to like it now that I know what it's supposed to be. Which is so weird. If you think about your perception and the psychology of your taste buds and stuff like that, you think something's gross, right? And then you understand it a little bit, and suddenly you don't think it's gross anymore.
That's very true.
Isn't that weird?
No, that is true.
Yeah.
And then the other way around, you think something's not gross until you learn what it is.
And then suddenly, like, oh, I'm not, nasty, that's disgusting. Yeah.
No, definitely.
So,
Well, how'd you feel about your first mystery beer?
I thought it was really cool. It's fun. I've never done anything like this before.
It's always a good
time. I should say people have like handed me a beer in a glass at a party.
And then you need to figure it out.
Yeah. But that's kind of a, never like this where we're really breaking them down and analyzing. Actually, to be honest, I don't break down and analyze a lot of my beers. So it's a really nice change of pace to sit and do this.
It's fun. And then you just... Since I've been doing it so much, I just am in that mode all the time
when I'm drinking beers. And it's refreshing to do it that way because you're really taking the time to appreciate and pull out a lot of them. And especially on something that's big format or it's expensive, or I will sit and just like really, really nurse it and let it. This sounds bad. I don't refrigerate my beer.
I've been thinking about not refrigerating my beer too. I typically like my IPAs at room temperature, to be honest. Although I do want to refrigerate them to keep the hops,
of course,
intact.
Right.
Hop flavors and aromas.
You sit intact, on a lot more beer than I do.
Yeah.
I buy beer and I drink it. Yeah. And not knocking you or anything. That's just
that's
personal habits.
I don't even know how it happens. I do and I don't.
Yeah. So I it's partly that English people drink their beer cellar temperature, which is 55 to 60, right? And I don't, other than distinct German styles. So Schwarz beer. Real Pilsner, and you're like, those go in the fridge because for me, those crisp lagers and all that, they're supposed to be cold and not cold, but chilled.
Yeah. Cause it masks the kind of a little assy finish.
Yeah. And I think that's the way the brewer intended it, where I think a lot of these ales, people are drinking them way too cold.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it makes them clam up.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
You don't get enough aromas flavors.
Drink an IPA on cask and then drink the same IPA sitting back in the fridge room on a CO2, it's not the same beer.
Yeah, it'll taste different.
So smell especially is huge. Yeah. So my friends come over. Sometimes if I know I'm having company over, I'll put some stuff in the fridge because I know for a fact.
That's what people like.
Yeah, but
there are even people who put ice cubes in white wine. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, my mother. Do you not want to taste the wine at all? Mm-hmm. All you want to taste is alcohol. That's it.
So my mom drinks Chardonnay, exclusively, and she puts ice cubes in it. It's just what she's always
done. Two things I don't like, ice cubes and wine and Chardonnay.
Part is my mom's fantastic. She's just, that's her drinking.
Everyone's got their own thing.
It's so funny because we've tried her on everything. We try to give a Riesling. I won't get into wine too much, but she just always goes back to Chardonnay.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for being on. I'm glad you enjoyed it. We'll, see if you're around for some more, because I'd love to pick your brain about all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, I had a good time, so I'm game, man. I'm game.
You are welcome anytime.
All right.
Anytime.
All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you, and thank everyone for listening, and
cheers.
Please remember to keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.